dates, with the birth of Pacifica in Berkeley in 1949.
KPFA On the Air chronicles the origins of the free speech movement, the first stirrings of the student movements at Berkeley, and opposition to the Vietnam War in the early 1960s.
Eventually spawning a network of free-form, independent radio stations across the country, including KBOO, which came on the air in 1968. So come join us at the Hollywood Theater, Northeast 41st and Sandy Boulevard, Sunday, November 3rd, at 7 in the evening.
Help keep community radio strong and thriving into the future.
The time is 5:01, and this is KBOO FM, Portland. Coming up next is the KBOO Evening News, made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from the Clinton Street Theater, featuring independent and revival films, the Rocky Horror Picture Show every Saturday at midnight, as well as the monthly KBOO Movie Night. The Clinton Street Theater is located at the corner of Southeast Clinton and 26th in Portland. Schedule and information at 503-238-5588 or cstpdx.com. Coming up right now, the KBOO Evening News.
And now, your daily volunteer-produced community newscast, the KBOO Evening News.
Coming up on our hour-long membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News, Oregon squeaks by on its latest environmental report card.
Black Panther reporter Kilu Inyasha has updates on the case of political prisoner Hugo Pinnell.
A live interview with Commissioner Amanda Fritz about future of Right to Dream 2. Good evening. This is the KBOO Evening News for Friday, October 25th, 2013. Joining us live on tonight's news to talk about the Right to Dream 2 homeless rest area in Portland is Portland City Commissioner Amanda Fritz. 2 weeks ago, after a heated five-hour-long public hearing, the Portland City Council decided to delay the vote on whether to offer the Right to Dream 2 a new location under the Broadway Bridge. Right to Dream 2 set up a rest area in a private lot on Burnside 2 years ago and has served hundreds of homeless people and families at no cost to the city or taxpayers. Commissioner Amanda Fritz serves as the Commissioner of Development Services. Her bureau issued a zoning decision that authorized the move of the rest area from their current location to a city-owned parking lot under the Broadway Bridge. But a threatened lawsuit from the Pearl District Neighborhood Association may have derailed that plan. Commissioner Fritz, can you start by telling us what role, if any, the threatened lawsuit has played in the delay of the City Council vote on this issue?
None whatsoever.
So talk about how that delay has, because it's been delayed a second time. I understand there are ongoing negotiations between all of the parties.
No, it's just been delayed the once. We had the hearing on October 3rd, and at that hearing, Mayor Hales listened to some of the Pearl District interests who said that they were willing to try to find another solution. So we had agreed to defer action on the use agreement for Lot 7, which is the parking lot under the Lovejoy ramp of the Broadway Bridge, until the Pearl Group had had an opportunity to offer some alternative solutions. They have offered some sites which don't work, but they would like some more time now to continue looking for alternative sites. So
okay.
What's happening right now is that they are negotiating with Right to Dream 2 and the current property owner to see if they can make it worth their while to give a little more time rather than implementing the settlement agreement.
The settlement agreement that was negotiated to for the lawsuit you're talking about between Right to Dream 2 and the city?
Correct.
And so that lawsuit at this point is being stayed.
Right.
It's not going forward. There was also word of a threatened lawsuit, it seemed like, coming from the Pearl District Neighborhood Association. Is that something that you've been responding to?
No, they have threatened to sue every step of the way. They have filed a notice of intent to appeal that should we move forward with the zoning confirmation letter as a final decision, that they would appeal that to the Land Use Board of Appeals. But since it isn't a final decision yet, they've put a hold on that.
And so at this time, would you say that everybody is in a mode of negotiating?
I think that was the intent of the mayor's asking for a delay. I don't know what the latest is today. I certainly continue to negotiate or even collaborate with Right to Dream 2 and the current property owners, trying to find a solution that would allow some more time. The Pearl District Group has not responded to the latest request from Right to Dream 2.
Do you anticipate getting a resolution in the 60-day delay time of finding a property that all parties can be satisfied with, if not happy with?
Well, we haven't agreed to the 60-day delay yet, so
all right.
That's still up in the air as to whether the Pearl Group can make it worth Right to Dream 2 and the property owner's while to agree to a 60-day extension. I think... Well, we found from the last 3 weeks' discussions, it's a lot more difficult to find a site where it's legal for the use to be allowed than the Pearl Group had initially considered. Because I started looking for a new site soon after I was assigned development services in June, and it took us a while to find Lot 7.
So. It seems to me that there could be a point at which this becomes a crisis again, depending on if you can resolve the situation to maintain Right to Dream 2 where it is.
Well, we currently have a crisis, and there's 1,800 people sleeping outside with nowhere where it's legal for them to be. So that's a problem that will be ongoing, regardless of whether we find a new spot for Right to Dream 2. That will be up to 100 people with somewhere to go. There will still be 1,700-plus people who have nowhere legal to sleep in Portland.
Well, and thank you for segueing into that next point, because the city has a 10-year plan to end homelessness, but clearly it's not been succeeding in that. There are still, as you've said, something like 1,600 to 1,800 people sleeping on the streets every night.
But it ended homelessness for hundreds of people. So, the Bible says the poor will always be with us. So it's not the same people on the streets today as it was 10 years ago. For individuals, it has been successful in finding housing for a lot of people. The challenge is that, especially over the recession, more and more people have become homeless, and we don't have enough affordable housing or shelter beds to accommodate them all.
And I think that given the economic crisis worldwide, we may see an increase in this. I personally drive through the area where Right to Dream 2 is now, and I've seen an increase of people throughout the areas where people do sleep on the street over the last few years, and I've never seen anything slowing it down in the last several years. So given that, part of the plan that the city had included perhaps opening city-owned properties that are currently vacant to people who are homeless. What are your thoughts on that option?
I don't think I've heard that proposed as a solution. We saw when people were camping outside in Chapman and Lansdale squares during the Occupy movement that when you have an assortment of folks who may be there for very different reasons with no organizational structure and no governance structure, it can quickly become quite dangerous for vulnerable people. The contrast with Right to Dream 2 is that there is a board and a strict set of rules, no alcohol, no drugs, no weapons, and that people look after each other. So it's not as simple as opening up a space, whether it's inside or outside, where people can gather together. You've got to have strong leadership and community governance to make sure that it stays a safe place.
There were reports earlier today about giant rocks being put under I-205 to block up areas where people had been camping. What do you think about that kind of solution on the part of any government entity, actually?
I haven't seen what happened there. I've been busy in my office all day.
All right. All right. Well, thank you very much for joining us today, Commissioner Fritz. We'll look forward to seeing what is the next point that will be brought forward. As you said, we really are at a crisis point in the city with this many people sleeping outside without shelter every night. And thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you for inviting me and for caring about this. This is really a community problem. It's not the Pearl District problem or the Old Towns or Right to Dream 2. It's all of our challenge to find ways to make it safe for people, at the very least to make it safe to people to be outside, but then also to work on how do we provide enough inside shelter, given that we can't solve houselessness for everybody in America with the decreasing in federal subsidies. So thank you for engaging in this difficult challenge.
You're welcome, and thank you for joining KBOO today.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
KBOO volunteers have stepped up their game to bring you this locally produced newscast every single evening, so now we are asking you to do the same. Joining us now are Ren and Dan to talk about how you can support KBOO Community Radio.
Thank you so much, Sam and Linda. And Sam, I love hearing your voice on the radio. It is so awesome, so welcome to that room. Linda was just talking to Commissioner Amanda Fritz, and she said she had not heard about any plans to ask the city to use empty properties to help shelter the homeless. We got the scoop on Amanda, because last week we reported that the Occupy Portland folks are actually intend to ask the city to use one of our closed schools, recently closed schools, to help shelter our homeless people. So we're reporting a broader spectrum, more perspective on that subject than was just available in that interview. That's how awesome we are. 877-500-5266. Before I pass the mic on to Dan, I've got two thank yous. Don and Carol from Banks and John from Portland, thank you so much for dialing 877-500-5266 and making your contribution as we inch towards our goal.
Thank you very much. And, you know, as I was listening to that last news report brought to us by a volunteer and produced by a volunteer and engineered by a volunteer, I got to thinking about so many other issues that we here at KBOO see on a daily basis and are as concerned about. The homeless issue, necessary. Health care, so very important. And we do face that on we face that challenge of reporting and confronting the needs of the health care system. Employment, not only employment for the homeless, but how about the vets that come home that have no jobs, no security, no employment. All of these are issues that we face right here at KBOO, and we bring to your attention. And we think they're vital and important issues because they affect you, they affect me, they affect everyone in our community. That means you need to pick up the phone right now, 877-500-5266. Go online to kboo.fm or go to 20 Southeast 8th Avenue. Whatever you do, however you do it right now. We have folks waiting to answer the phone. They want to take your pledge. And by the way, let me remind you, when you call, ask one of our folks about gifts that they may have to provide to you for that pledge that you're going to give to KBOO, for that gift that you're going to give to KBOO, for that generosity that you're providing to KBOO. And we want to say thank you in 100 different ways, but we want you first and foremost to pick up the phone and dial 877-500-5266. And most importantly, we want you to do it right now, kboo.fm, or walk in the door at 20 Southeast 8th. Let's go back to the news.
Both of Oregon's senators have been named to the conference committee to rework the federal budget. The committee is a group of congressmen and senators in charge of budget negotiations following the government shutdown. In addition to Senators Jeff Merkley and Ron Wyden, Washington Senator Patty Murray will also serve on the committee as Senate Budget Committee Chairwoman. This position gives the Pacific Northwest much influence in shaping the budget for the remainder of 2014. Senator Wyden has stated his intent to improve Medicare access and has been outspoken about his opposition to Social Security cuts. The committee's House Budget Chairman, Paul Ryan, is known to be in favor of cutting these and other entitlement programs. The conference committee's 29 members will hold their first meeting next Wednesday. December 13th is the deadline to report their recommendations to the House and Senate. The federal government's temporary spending authority expires on January the 15th. A new funding mechanism to keep agencies open will be needed by then in order to avoid another government shutdown. Whether this new mechanism will be a longer-term plan or another temporary stopgap measure could depend on the success of the committee reaching a deal.
Oregon has passed a 2013 environmental report with a minimal C-plus average. Vehicular traffic and electrical power generation are the largest contributing factors to this low score. Oregonians are traveling less miles by vehicle, and gas consumption per capita is now as low as it was in 1962. Despite this fact, power generated by fossil fuel continues to pose a significant threat to our air quality. Portland General Electric has agreed to cease burning coal at the Boardman plant by the end of 2020. This does not rest all concerns regarding energy dependency and greenhouse gas emissions. Oregon State Treasurer Ted Wheeler, along with 45 global institutional energy investors, sent letters to energy companies such as PGE in September. Wheeler had already joined other Oregon-based employers in signing a climate declaration last June. KBOO's Logan Unterberg reports.
I'm speaking with the communications director for the Oregon Treasurer, Mr. James Sinks. I've read into this report about Oregon's failing grade in air quality and how you, along with 45 companies, have sent letters. Have you received a response to any of those letters?
It's still too soon. We have, again, this is an effort with investors all over the globe, and we've asked these companies to respond to our questions by their annual meetings in 2014.
And are there any conditions that are required to be met, or is it just a voluntary participation?
When a significant number of your investors engages with you as a corporation, you'll find that many but not all companies will deal with you in good faith and communicate what they're working on. Direct engagement efforts like this in the past have been successful in terms of helping to educate investors as to what's going on with the company. When you're a shareholder like Oregon and many of these institutional investors are, it's important to know what's happening both on and behind balance sheets. And when it comes to energy companies, climate change is going to be a big issue today and tomorrow. And that can affect Oregon families, and it can affect the value of our investments going forward.
And what are the primary terms of the climate declaration that was signed in June?
The climate declaration was a cooperative effort between the treasurer, Oregon employers, ski areas, urging Congress and business leaders to recognize that climate change is an important issue, and there are actually business opportunities there. Oregon, as an investor, has been a leader when it comes to looking at opportunities across the spectrum, and we are actively seeking investment opportunities in clean energy, which we believe is going to be the profitable trend of the future and the right way to go.
What exactly, if we could put it into sort of less technical terms, is a risk assessment under a low carbon scenario?
We're talking to a range of companies, from mining companies to fuel refiners to fuel distributors. Each of them have different business plans, but all of them could potentially be affected by changes in emission regulations, a carbon tax, and we want to make sure that those companies are anticipating that as they're looking into the future. And so each of them would have to look at their own business plans and determine how well suited they are for a different regulatory future.
I've been speaking with the communications director for the Oregon State Treasurer, James Sinks. This is Logan Unterberg with KBOO News.
The Oregon Health Authority, or the OHA, is paying less attention to blooms of toxic algae off the Oregon coast because a grant from the CDC paying for them to do so has expired. Experts say toxic algae blooms are increasing worldwide due to increasing temperatures and rainfall, and that these blooms tend to peak during the late summer. The rain washes nitrogen from fertilizers, water treatment plants, septic leaks, and livestock feedlots into waterways, which then feed the rapid growth of toxic algae. In high concentrations, these toxins can be harmful and possibly fatal to humans and animals. In one incident last year, 100 elk died after drinking from a body of water contaminated with toxic algae in New Mexico. The health authority has been using the $150,000 grant to monitor bodies of water and issue warnings. But even with the grant, the monitoring was incomplete, ignoring many small or remote bodies of water. The OHA will continue to issue public warnings to keep people and pets out of some lakes, but they won't have funds to keep track of water samples or do more widespread public education.
You are listening to an hour-long membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News. We'd like to remind you that you can call to renew your KBOO membership or become a member at any time during this program by calling 877-500-5266. Stay tuned for Bread and Roses at 6. We'll hear from Alicia Abbott about her memoir on a child's eye view of the gay liberation movement. And at 7, it's a Pacifica Archives special featuring Voices of Feminism. Tomorrow's weather is foggy with a chance of showers on Sunday.
It's 5:23, time for daily commentary from Jim Hightower.
I haven't heard such enthusiastic, downright raucous applause since Texas Governor Oops Perry suggested in 2009 that his state just might withdraw from the Union. Unfortunately for him, the applauders were not Texans, but the people of the other 49 states. This year, though, Idaho is the recipient of hip hip hoorays from across the country. Why? Because it has been selected as the site of an extraordinary new town to be named Three Citadel. This will be a walled, heavily fortified, one-square-mile settlement of some 7,000 armed and angry, ideologically pure, anti-government extremists drawn from cities, towns, and gopher holes all across America. Lucky you, Idaho! Founder and apocalyptic visionary Christian Alan Carradine says the Roman numeral 3 in the name of his citadel scheme represents what he calls the 3%ers, the percentage of Americans who are super patriots, survivalists, capable of withstanding the coming economic doomsday and social upheaval. He says that once established, he and his fellow citadelians will take it upon themselves to restore America to Americans. The Southwest will be purged of Latinos, he explains, and enclaves of Muslims, such as in Detroit, will be culled by fed-up Americans looking for some payback. In Carradine's barricaded utopia, everyone older than 13, quote, must possess an AR-15 assault rifle, 5 magazines, and 1,000 rounds of ammunition. In an odd comparison, he declares that his last bastion of liberty will be like Disneyland, a walled, gated private property. Yeah, only goofier. This is Jim Hightower saying, of course, the three in the Citadel's name could also refer to Carradine's three felony convictions. Nonetheless, if he can actually bring 7,000 like-minded zealots into his compound, we can sneak up and lock the gates from the outside.
Hightower's commentaries are brought to you by the Hightower Lowdown, the monthly newsletter with Hightower's populist take on what the powers that be are up to. Find out more at hightowerlowdown.org.
You are listening to a membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News. Our volunteers work hard every day to bring you this coverage of local, national, and international news, and now it's your opportunity to help out. Joining us now are Ren and Dan to talk about how you can support KBOO Community Radio.
Well, I can tell you right now, my friends, my good friends, I want to tell you that we're only $180 away from our $300 goal for this hour, but we can achieve that goal. You can help us achieve that goal by picking up the phone right now, 877-500-5266, or go online to kboo.fm, or come on in the station. We're here. We're alive. We're not on recorder. We're real live bleeding people. We want to see you. We want to thank you for your support. 20 Southeast 8th Avenue. You know, Ren, I got to thinking during that last news segment that I live in a very unusual circumstance. I live in a retirement community, and within that retirement community are a number of people that listen to KBOO, but they're also retired hippies, retired anarchists, retired from living and doing things their own way after so many years. And it's sort of refreshing rather than hearing the same old bland stuff every day, but hearing from other people their concern about what's going on in America. And I get people coming up to me quite often just saying, you know, why don't they do this on KBOO, or why don't they do that? And I say, why don't you give them a call and say, hey, I want to get that done. I want to do it. I want to be a part of it. Well, you can be a part of it too, starting off by picking up the phone and dialing 877-500-5266.
Well, Dan, I have a ways to go before I'm retired, but, you know, being retired doesn't mean that you are done.
Thank you.
That means you have amazing hippie wisdom to share with us, with our KBOO listeners, and it would be amazing if some of you folks came on down and volunteered.
Hey, dude, you really mean that?
And even better if you called 877-500-5266. Here at BOO HQ, we've got Sam, Jesse, Andrew, Barbara, four very chipper volunteers, perky even, or effervescent, if you will, ready to answer those phones because they want to take your call at 877-500-5266. Or you can come on down to BOO HQ yourself at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue. Or if you're feeling really shy and you just can't handle meet space right now, you've got kboo.fm. You can click, and give us the green.
And do it now, most importantly. Listen, my friend, we've been saying this for the last hour and three quarters or hour and a half. Can you afford $5 a month? Can you afford $15 a month? Can you afford $25 a month? What is your comfort level? Give us a call at 877-500-5266 and say, hey, listen, I can give you $7 a month, and I'll be happy to do that. Why don't you pick up the phone right now and make that happen? You're the one that helps us achieve our goal, and you're the one that allows us to reach those other goals that it takes to operate this radio station. 877-500-5266.
And you know, Dan, that is an excellent way to support the station. If you have a monthly deduction from your bank account, because each month you can look at your statement. Each month you can remind yourself of the satisfaction of supporting non-commercial community radio. We have been going 23 million minutes and counting, 45 years and counting. And we can be reached, we can be supported, we can be loved at 877-500-5266. But you know, first we've got some food donors to thank. That would be Eclectic Kitchen at 4936 Northeast Fremont, Vita Cafe, 3203 Northeast Alberta, DeNicola's Restaurant at 3520 Southeast Powell Boulevard. They have kept us sustained and fed, and we need your sustenance. We need your food, and we eat here at KABU. We eat dollars. We need dollars to fill our tummies. We need dollars to pay the electric bills. We need dollars to keep that poor lava lamp running. We need your calls at 877-500-5266. Oh, looks like the hamster stopped running on the wheel that churns that lava
lamp. We have
lamp.
A budget of $739,000 this year, and we need your help to help support that, to sustain it. 877-500-5266. By all means, pick up the phone right now and call.
A former Black Panther had a parole hearing this week after serving more than 50 years in prison. Hugo Pinnell was imprisoned in California in 1964 with a short sentence, but because of his activity with the Black Panther Party while locked up, he has served over 50 years in prison. 43 of these years have been in solitary confinement. Pinnell, also known as Yogi Bear, was one of the San Quentin Six charged with conspiracy for the murder of three prison guards in 1971. Black Panther reporter Kilu Inyasha claims that the conspiracy was framed in order to punish conscious prisoners for their political beliefs. And Inyasha has been following the case for over four decades and reports that Pinnell will finally have a parole hearing in about 1 month. For more on the story, KABU's Jennifer Kemp spoke with Kilu Inyasha.
Talk about the case of Hugo Pinnell. What was he originally incarcerated for, and what was his experience like in prison since?
Well, he was originally charged with an assault on a woman in a state of drunkenness when he was 19 years old. He turned himself in because he was extremely remorseful. He did a plea deal, and unfortunately, instead of getting a few years, he wound up being incarcerated for 49 years.
You consider Pinnell, or Yogi Bear, a political prisoner. Why?
Oh, absolutely. Well, he went in as a quote-unquote criminal. And he was transformed inside with brothers like George Jackson, W.L. Nolan, and others who became very political and struggled to transform the criminal mentality into a revolutionary mentality. At the same time, they were fighting against the imposed segregation and racism. During the 60s, the attacks upon blacks were so strong and so sanctioned by the administrations that there was literally a war on blacks. Blacks were being brutalized, being murdered, being thrown in the hole. Hugo would jump in if he saw a brother being brutalized by a guard. He didn't even have to know him. He would jump in and defend him. So he was known as a brother who would really fight to protect and defend fellow prisoners, against the kind of guard brutality that was happening at the time. And he and George and others made it safe for blacks to walk the yard.
Pinnell is one of the San Quentin Six, charged with conspiracy in the killing of three prison guards in 1971. From your perspective, what really happened?
Well, we believe that, and there's a lot of evidence that points to it, that George Jackson was literally set up for assassination by the administration, because they had tried to kill him on a number of occasions. In fact, he was a martial artist, so he was not easy to get to. So, in any case, the events that happened, three guards and two inmates, turnkeys, were killed that same day. The six brothers were charged with everything, and the only one of the six prisoners in the longest trial that California had ever had the only prisoner, the only defendant who was actually convicted of murder was Johnny Spain. Oh, so was one of the six defendants, only he was convicted of two assaults, but he was not convicted of murder, which is why he had, to answer your question, it's very political. He has done 43 years in lockup, 23 years in the infamous Pelican Bay Shu, which is really a torture chamber. I've been there and to visit him on, several times, about five times, and it's located near the Oregon border. It looks like a gray, the Shu security housing unit, looks like a solid gray concrete tomb. It has no windows. It only has a door. And it's mind-boggling to see. And he is, the prisoners in that lockup, in that windowless, 4-7, in lockup, but they may get out to what they call the dog run, another outdoor closet that has plexiglass on top of it, 20-foot-high walls. Nothing, you know, play with, no ball, no basket, nothing. So they, if they get out there, they might get out for an hour a day, if the guards allow them to. And then they're escorted, you know, in handcuffs and all that, too, you know, by two guards. So there's absolutely no contact, no phone call, no, and they're in a 6x8 cell with a concrete bed, if you can call it a bed, a toilet and a sink and a TV. That's it. And they have, they're allowed very limited possessions, a very limited supply of books and papers. So that's what he's endured for 23 years in Pelican Bay. The visit on October 22nd, we all kind of anticipated a 15-year hit because they had already given him one but had to rescind it because the timing was wrong and it hadn't taken effect yet. So the hearing, so Keith Watley managed to get the hearing postponed, which gave him enough time to get a good case together. And when he made his presentation at the board this time, apparently they were somewhat confused over the issues that he presented, the cases and so on. On October 22nd of this year, just a, you know, days ago, Ugo went to board anticipating that he would get a 15-year hit because of the fact that they had already given it to him. But they had to rescind it and reschedule. So this was the rescheduled hearing. And at this hearing, of course, since they had already given him 15 years, we all thought that he would get it again. And so the Keith Watley prepared his case to with a strategy that if they did, in fact, give him the 15-year hit, he would appeal it. So we think it's very hopeful that the board decided to continue the case, study it further. And so this will probably take a month or two. We don't know how long they'll drag it out. But we kind of think subjectively, of course, that because of all the publicity, mainstream publicity, that solitary confinement has gotten due to the hunger strikes and the both here in California and Guantanamo.
Again, I've been speaking to Kilo Nyasha. This is Jennifer Kemp with KBOO News.
Supporters of Green Scare prisoner Marie Mason have organized a day of action today to call for Marie to be removed, to be moved from the maximum security isolation cell where she is currently being held to a medium security facility near her parents and her son. For more, KBOO's Jenka Soderberg spoke with one of Marie Mason's supporters, Peter Werby.
Could you start by just telling us a little bit about Marie, what she's charged with, how long she's in prison for, and what her conditions are?
Well, Marie Mason is a longtime Michigan and Ohio activist, both in environmental and social justice and peace concerns. And in 1999 and 2000, she and her then husband committed some acts of what we call eco-sabotage. And 8 years later, out of spite, he reported their actions to the FBI. She was arrested, charged with these crimes. She pled guilty in 2009 and was sentenced to 22 years in prison because they had what they called terrorism enhancement sentencing as well. Normally, it was arson, she burned GMO records belonging to Monsanto at Michigan State University in East Lansing, Michigan. Normally, a sentence for arson would carry something like 8 or 9 years. If you're familiar with the Green Scare, these are people that have been arrested and charged either by the government sending in agent provocateurs or people that wound up with extremely long sentences. Marie has the longest sentence of anyone of this whole group that has been under attack by the government.
Wow. And where is she being held and what conditions?
She is being held in what we call a cement hellhole. She was in a medium security prison in Waseca, Minnesota. She never had any infractions of rules. She was known as a peacemaker with other inmates. She taught classes in guitar, and she was just gently serving her time. She was whisked away one night to Carswell, which is Carswell FMC, Federal Medical Center, and she is put in an administrative unit, which is reserved mostly for violent prisoners that have a history of assaultive behavior, prisoners that have tried to escape. These are all women. And her feet have not touched anything but concrete in the last 3 years, and she hasn't seen the sky except through wire mesh in that period as well. Prisoners act out there all the time. They fight among each other. There's no exercise available. I mean, nobody should be in those conditions, and certainly not Marie, who is an extraordinarily gentle person. This is just punitive and arbitrary on the part of the Bureau of Prisons.
So today is a day of action for Marie Mason. Can you tell our listeners what you're asking people to do?
Well, you know, this is kind of a come down from like Free Mumia or Free Leonard Peltier. We're just asking that Marie be moved to a facility that's more consistent with her personality and her status as a prisoner. We'd like to move Marie, and you can go to movemarie.com. And what we're asking people to do is to write to the Bureau of Prisons and say, please move her. She doesn't belong in here. She's not an escape risk. She's not an assaultive personality. She doesn't break rules. And she needs to be near her family and friends, not stuck away thousands of miles from them. And I could give you the address, but it probably would be much better and easier if people went to the website. There's also supportmarie.org.
Really important questions to be asked. And we're in our fundraising period here at KBOO. What do you think is the role of community media in getting out information like this to people in Portland and elsewhere?
Well, extraordinary. I work for commercial radio stations here in Detroit. And the difference, I was looking at your lineup of music and of information programs, and I was just astounded. What's happened with commercial radio, obviously, is the same thing that's happening with agriculture, monocrop. And so the idea that KBOO and the few stations like that, unfortunately, it's unfortunate there's so few around the country, are just absolute jewels and need to be supported in every manner that they can. And in this case, during fundraising periods, I know people go, oh, they're doing the fundraising, I'm turning off. If you do, don't turn off until you make your donation.
Well, thanks so much. Again, I've been speaking with Peter Werbe. He is a supporter of Marie Mason, who is an eco-prisoner currently in Texas. The website for today's Day of Action is movemarie.com. Thanks for joining us, Peter Werbe.
All right. Thank you so much.
This is Jenka Soderberg with KBOO News.
And this is Linda here with the KBOO Evening News. It's time now to give you the opportunity to show your support for KBOO's Evening News. As you heard our last guest, you know, you can reach out across the nation and you'll find out that people everywhere who are taking up progressive causes and defending political prisoners will say, independent radio is so important. So let's go now to Ren and Dan, and they can tell you exactly how to support the KBOO Evening News. We want to hear those phones ringing in the background.
Thank you, Linda. We are having a smooth show. This is like butter. All of us volunteers. We got Ian Engineering tag teaming between Sam and Linda, Dan and I here, and we want you to make those phones ring, 877-500-5266. I can't get enough saying that number. I'll say it again, 877-500-5266. Or you can come on down to 20 Southeast 8th Avenue or go online to kboo.fm. Last hour, Dan was telling us all about the five media conglomerations that own most of the media in Portland. When you make a call to them and when you subscribe to their services, you do not get the kind of personal thank you that the list of people is about to get.
You can't subscribe because they own the airwaves. All you do is turn on the radio and listen to them play their music. And then every 17 minutes you hear endless advertising.
So we've got some folks who get the kid glove treatment because they called 877-500-5266. Let's hear it, Dan.
Hey, we want to say a big thank you to John here in Portland, Don and Carol from Banks, John again in Portland, Doug in Portland, Michael in Portland for all calling in and saying they want to be a part of the great KBOO community. Thank you so much for doing that. Couple of other pieces of good news. One is we are now only about $16,000 away from achieving our fall membership goal.
Woo!
We can hit that number. We can do that. And I want to say a great big thank you also because it looks like we have achieved our goal for this hour, but that doesn't mean we stop. That means we continue. That means we press on. That means you pick up the phone and dial 877-500-5266 or go online to kboo.fm. Stop in the station here at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue. Most importantly, do something and do it now. 877-500-5266.
Let me spell it out for you. That's KBOONOW at 877-500-5266. Call now, call now, call now.
The United States National Security Agency, or NSA, has been under great pressure for its intense surveillance and data gathering practices. Private technology companies have now begun to produce promotional material targeted for law enforcement and defense agencies. Products with the ability to monitor civilians at protests or in other crowds are commercialized in the ads. The specific nature of the intelligence gathered seems to be capturing data sent to social media websites. It is not known at this time which law enforcement or security agencies are using such technologies. Evidence suggests that mass surveillance of this type is commonly used against many individuals who are not directly target of an investigation.
A classified NSA memo leaked by Edward Snowden shows that at least 35 world leaders have been the target of phone surveillance. German Chancellor Angela Merkel accused the NSA of tapping her mobile device last Wednesday. In a recent interview with CNN, White House Press Secretary Jay Carney insisted that the chancellor's phone is not and will not be monitored. No denial was issued regarding any past wiretapping of the German leader's mobile. The leaked memo is expected to increase tensions between the United States and the other foreign allies named as targets of the monitoring.
An earthquake struck about 230 miles off Japan's east coast today and caused a small tsunami that elevated sea level by about a foot. There were no immediate reports of damage on land from the quake, which Japan's meteorological agency classified as a magnitude 7.1. The operator of Japan's wrecked Fukushima nuclear plant said there was no damage or spike in radiation levels at the station. A spokesman at Tokyo Electric Power Company, or TEPCO, which operates Fukushima, said some workers had been ordered to evacuate to higher ground after the quake, but that there was no damage or change in readings at radiation monitoring posts around the plant. Buildings shook as far away as Tokyo, 230 kilometers south of the nuclear plant.
The authors of two United Nations reports highly critical of the U.S. drone program addressed a plenary session of the U.N. General Assembly in New York today. In response, the U.S. government has defended its use of drone strikes in Pakistan, Yemen, and other countries, telling a chamber full of largely critical nations that, in President Obama's view, the deployment of drones against al-Qaeda targets was, quote, necessary, legal, and just, end quote. Representatives from a slew of nations, including Brazil, China, and Venezuela, lined up to challenge the Obama administration's intensive use of drone strikes. The first report was summarized by the UN Special Rapporteur on Extrajudicial Executions. His study warned of the danger of proliferation of the UN-piloted weapons among states and terrorist groups. The accountability theme was picked up by a second UN expert, the Special Rapporteur on Human Rights and Counterterrorism, whose investigation has concluded that the 33 drone strikes that are known to have caused civilian casualties may have been carried out in violation of international law. He urged delegates to consider whether an absolute ban was needed to end the secret deals between states, such as between Pakistan and the U.S., for engagement in joint military actions. According to the Washington Post today, U.S. officials are alerting some foreign intelligence services that documents detailing their secret cooperation with the United States were obtained by former National Security Agency contractor Edward Snowden and may soon be publicly released, blowing the lid off some of the secret deals.
In the latest news from U.S.-occupied Afghanistan, a road bomb planted in western Afghanistan killed six Afghan soldiers on Thursday. Elsewhere in the country, Afghan security forces killed 10 Taliban fighters during a four-hour firefight. Four militants placing a roadside bomb in the Paktika province were also killed on Thursday by their own explosives. Half an hour earlier and only a few miles away, an IED placed by the same militants killed one and injured four. Also on Thursday, nine people were injured, including women and children, when a missile fired from Afghanistan struck Waziristan. Cross-border rocket attacks in the Waziristan tribal region of Pakistan are common and have killed three Pakistani soldiers and one civilian over the past month.
You are listening to an hour-long membership drive special of the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Carl Fisher, Sam Bowman, Logan Utterberg, Genevieve McDaniels, and Zeke Harrington. The producer is Jennifer Daphne Kemp. Our engineer is Ian Gadbury. The KBOO Evening News and Public Affairs Director is Jenka Soderberg. A podcast of this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/eveningnews. You're listening to KBOO at 90.7 FM in Portland, in Philomath on translator K282BH at 104.3 FM, and in Hood River at 91.9 FM on translator K220HR. I'm Linda Olson Osterlund.
And I'm Sam Bowman. Coming up on Monday morning on KBOO, at 7, it's Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez. At 8, on More Talk Radio, hosts Celeste Carey and Cecil Prescott interview psychologist Anthony Tony Greenwald, who co-wrote the book Blind Spot, Hidden Biases of Good People, which explores the hidden biases we all carry from a lifetime of exposure to cultural attitudes about age, gender, race, ethnicity, religion, social class, sexuality, disability status, and nationality. At 9, it's the Old Mole Variety Hour, a program of social and political commentary from a socialist feminist point of view. At 10, hear Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. At 10:15, it's Locus Focus, a weekly interview show about our place on the planet, hosted by Barbara Bernstein. And at 11, on Disability Awareness, host Grace Eagle Reed welcomes Portland City Commissioner Amanda Fritz and Ibrahim Mubarak of Right to Dream 2. Thank you, members, new and renewing, for all your support in our fall membership drive. And I'm Sam.
And I'm Linda, and thank you for listening to KBOO. Next up will be Bread and Roses.
Outstanding news broadcast. We got the A-team. We got our engineer is just pumping his fist in the air. It rocked. And we are all volunteers, every single one of us. Not one of us is getting paid to sit here and give you the news. Not one of us is getting paid to sit here and tell you how awesome KBOO is, because KBOO is awesome. There ain't nothing like it out there in the world. We are the only ones. And we are at 877-500-5266. We're waiting for your call, because we are heading towards our goal. We are another $1,000 closer. We met our goal for this hour. Bread and Roses, they are leaping out of their seats. They're getting ready to do their show and take on the next goal.
Literally pushing us out. You know.
Settle down, Bread and Roses.
Yeah. Hold your horses.
Cheer down.
Hey, pick up the phone right now, 877-500-5266. Go online to kboo.fm or come on in the station, 20 Southeast 8th Avenue. No matter how you do it now. This is so very important, because what you do helps us bring for you the kind of programming that we bring all year long, 365 days a year, 7 days a week, 24 hours a day. You couldn't ask for much more than that. So let me tell you, my friend, just because we hit our goal for this hour, that does not mean that we are through. We need you to pick up the phone and dial 877-500-5266. Go online to kboo.fm or come on in the radio station, 20 Southeast 8th Avenue. One way or another, make your stand, make your statement, do it today.
How do you eat an elephant? One bite at a time. And as Dan said, we met last hour's goal, but we still have many more goals to go, many more small goals to go. Many more little bites to keep taking away to at our grand total. You can get there. Help us get there by calling 877-500-5266. Oh, wait. Hold on. The odometer just rolled over. We have $14,000 left to go. We have the best members. You guys are kicking butt and taking names. Thank you so much for calling in, 877-500-5266. If you are not ready to get on the phone, you want to keep on listening, and you're feeling a little shy, you don't want to talk to Sam, Jesse, Andrew, or Barbara right now, go to kboo.fm. But, oh, if you would love to see these smiling faces at Boo HQ, come on down to 20 Southeast 8th Avenue.
And, you know, Ani Haynes, our director of volunteers, made a statement a long time ago, and I think she probably stole this saying from somebody else, but she said that many hands make light work, and that is absolutely true. Do you know that you are among those that can add your hand? And you can do it if it's $5 a month, $10 a month, $15 a month, $25 a month. The very most important thing for you to do is to do it right now. It is true. We're only about $14,000 away from our goal. You can help us achieve that goal. Pick up the phone right now, 877-500-5266.
That's right. You can raise your hand on our behalf. You can use your hand to dial that phone. Once again, that number is 877-500-5266. Let me spell it out for you, KBOONOW.
And, you know, we're going to wrap it up right now. Bread and Roses is coming on here in just a moment. So one last time, 877 877- 800-500-5266. I'll say it again, 877-500-5266. And that's it. Thank you, folks.
Thank you very much. You are listening to KBOO Portland. Next, Bread and Roses, so stay tuned. First, I want to let you know that this KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Portland Saturday Market, where shopping is an art, celebrating 40 years of American arts and crafts, freshly prepared foods with an international flavor, and local music every Saturday and Sunday from March 3rd through Christmas Eve in Waterfront Park. Local artisans, international food, live music, PortlandSaturdayMarket.com.
At the dawn of the day, all the darkened kitchens, the mill of gray, are touched by the radiance that the sun discloses. Oh, hear the people singing, bread and roses.
Welcome to Bread and Roses, feminist news and public affairs, on the air since 1978, making it the longest-running feminist radio program in the country. I'm your host this week, Leanne Kranz. Tonight, we welcome writer Alicia Abbott, author of Fairyland, a memoir of my father, published by W.W. Norton & Company. Fairyland gives us a child's eye view of the gay liberation movement in San Francisco in the 70s and 80s. From the awakening of the community after the Stonewall Uprising through the devastation of the AIDS epidemic. It is also a tribute to her father, the writer Steve Abbott, a pioneering single gay parent at a time before public role models, resources, or ways to connect. And we have two copies of Fairyland to give away as thank you gifts if you donate to KBOO this hour. It is now my pleasure to welcome on the phone tonight from Cambridge, Massachusetts, Alicia Abbott.
Hi there, thank you.
Welcome. Thank you for being our guest on a late Friday night where you are.
Yes, no, it's